to this ASN Kidney 360 podcast. I am Aisha Sheikh, and I'm a nephrologist at the James J. Peters VA Medical Center in Bronx, New York. Today, I will discuss our perspective article entitled Real-Life Prescribing of SGLT2 Inhibitors, How to Handle Other Medications, Including Glucose-Lowering Drugs and Diuretics, published in Kidney 360 this April. Question: what clinical assessments are recommended prior to initiating SGLT2 inhibitors? Under what circumstances should SGLT2 inhibitors be avoided or delayed? Prior to initiation of SGLT2 inhibitors, patients' blood pressure, volume status, and blood glucose control must be assessed. Additionally, patients should be screened for underlying conditions that increase risk for adverse effects of SGLT2 inhibitors. Such conditions include cognitive impairment, advanced age, limited mobility, recurrent urinary tract infections, indwelling Foley catheter, neurogenic bladder, poor genital hygiene, solitary kidney, bilateral renal artery stenosis, use of immunosuppressive therapy, and history of diabetic ketoacidosis. Patients with any of these underlying conditions must be assessed on an individual basis, and the clinician must assess the risks and the benefits of SGLT2 inhibitor therapy. It is also important to note that the safety of SGLT2 inhibitors has not been established in kidney transplant recipients and in pregnant or lactating women. Question: which diabetic medications should be adjusted when SGLT2 inhibitors is started? Medications that increase risk of hypoglycemia may need dose adjustment at the time of SGLT2 inhibitor initiation. The risk of hypoglycemia is not increased in patients taking metformin, dipeptidyl peptidase 4 inhibitors, glucagon-like peptide 1 receptor agonist, and thiazolidine diones. Hence, these agents do not require dose adjustments at the time of SGLT2 inhibitor initiation. On the other hand, insulin, sulfonylurea, and meglitinides increase the risk of hypoglycemia and require dose adjustment at the time of SGLT2 inhibitor initiation in patients who already have optimal glycemic control or are already experiencing hypoglycemia. In such patients, sulfonylurea and meglitinides can either be stopped or the dose can be decreased by 50%. Patients who are on a traditional basal bolus insulin regimen, the rapid-acting bolus insulin must be reduced by 10 to 20%. Patients who are only using basal insulin, the insulin dose can be reduced by 10%. A stepwise dose reduction strategy of insulin is preferred rather than complete discontinuation of insulin therapy in order to mitigate the risk of diabetic ketoacidosis. All patients should be counseled on the risk, identification, and treatment of hypoglycemia. Question: what dose adjustments in diuretics should be performed upon initiation of SGLT2 inhibitors? SGLT2 inhibitor must not be initiated in hypotensive or hypovolemic patients. In these patients, the antihypertensive medications, including diuretics, may need to be stopped or reduced to restore normal tension. If the patient is hypervolemic or hypertensive, then SGLT2 inhibitors can be initiated without adjusting the dose of other antihypertensive medications. If the patient is euvolemic and normotensive, then antihypertensive agents, including diuretics, may need to be reduced or stopped if blood pressure drops upon SGLT2 inhibitor initiation. Question: when should euglycemic diabetic ketoacidosis be suspected in patients treated with SGLT2 inhibitors? Diabetic ketoacidosis associated with SGLT2 inhibitor therapy can be euglycemic, which means that the blood glucose can be less than 250 milligrams per deciliter. And yet, the patient can have diabetic ketoacidosis. The diagnosis of euglycemic diabetic ketoacidosis is established by the presence of a high anion gap metabolic acidosis and ketonemia. The absence of hyperglycemia can cause a diagnostic delay. Therefore, any patient on an SGLT2 inhibitor with symptoms of nausea, vomiting, and abdominal pain should be evaluated for euglycemic diabetic ketoacidosis. Question: what should be the clinical response to an acute decrease in estimated eGFR after initiation of SGLT2 inhibitor therapy? SGLT2 inhibitor therapy initiation can cause an acute decrease in eGFR. However, subsequently, the decline in eGFR is attenuated with continuation of SGLT2 inhibitor therapy. In the absence of hemodynamic instability or an alternate cause for acute kidney injury, the decline in eGFR following SGLT2 inhibitor therapy initiation is likely due to reduction in intraglomerular pressure. It may be difficult to distinguish whether the decline in eGFR is due to the hemodynamic effect of SGLT2 inhibitors or due to acute kidney injury. Therefore, it is important for the clinician to periodically monitor the kidney function over 2 to 4 weeks, as the decline in eGFR due to hemodynamic effects of SGLT2 inhibitor therapy is typically not progressive. It is worth noting that in large clinical trials, an overall reduction in acute kidney injury has been observed with the use of SGLT2 inhibitors. Thank you for joining me for this Kidney 360 podcast. In conclusion, SGLT2 inhibitors have emerged as an effective therapy for improving cardiovascular and kidney outcomes in patients with diabetic and non-diabetic proteinuric kidney disease. Additionally, SGLT2 inhibitors also improve cardiovascular outcomes in patients with established atherosclerotic heart disease and in heart failure. Therefore, it is imperative for the clinicians to use SGLT2 inhibitors in medically eligible patients.
This podcast is copyrighted by the American Society of Nephrology. All rights reserved. All content in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be medical advice. This podcast should not be used in a medical emergency or for the diagnosis or treatment of any medical condition. Please consult your doctor or other qualified healthcare provider if you have any questions about any medical condition or before taking any drug, changing your diet, or commencing or discontinuing any course of treatment. Thank you for listening to this podcast from the American Society of Nephrology.